Crosswires, navigating news with faith with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Crosswires, today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens, from a layman's questions and a clergyman's reaction. Now, here's Chris and Father Daniel.
So, Chris, we're a couple weeks into Advent now, but I've got a fundamental question for you. Do you go to Advent parties or to Christmas parties?
I don't know that I think about it, but I think about who my designated driver is going to be as I go home.
Well, that's a good thing. Well, this is a question that's come up. I mean, it's not just in jest, because some people really want to make sure that we're celebrating Advent parties while it's Advent, we're preparing, and Christmas is after Christmas.
Right.
And in fact, in Catholic tradition, we have the 8 days of Christmas from Christmas Day on, and we celebrate all the way into the octave.
Right.
So, yeah.
I guess
which
I'm going
are
to
you celebrating?
Advent parties.
Well, go to whatever they're advertising it as.
A professor at a university in Sweden has put forward what she says is a new theory of consciousness.
Okay.
We
talked about this a little bit last time.
We have.
The whole consciousness question.
Right. So there's always the fundamental question between believers and non-believers as to whether consciousness arises purely from the brain, or do we possess some sort of soul that persists after we die?
Sure.
This nanotechnology professor posits that some elementary form of consciousness is a basic, irreducible component of the universe existing everywhere, similar to gravity. In this view, consciousness isn't produced by the brain, but the brain is a structure that accesses or organizes it. She describes consciousness as being like a wave on the surface of the ocean. A wave has a form that is temporary, but the water that carries it does not vanish when the wave subsides.
Mm-hmm.
So I was thinking about that as being a new theory. And I think I've read about this before. I think 20 plus years ago, there was a theory called the electromagnetic field that was proposed by a woman mm-hmm. named Susan right. Pocket. So the Swiss professor says this would explain why telepathy-like phenomena that appear across all cultures and throughout history may be real and explainable. So first of all, what are your thoughts about that?
I think that anytime we're looking at theories, they're trying to explain phenomena. Like, what are we seeing in actual fact? And they're trying to get to a better explanation of the observable data. So there can be different theories at different times that better explain or don't explain as well the data. So I think it's fine for scientists to speculate on this and to look into different theories. I think it's really fascinating area for research. We talked about this a little bit last time too with the quantum entanglement theory, which has already been, to my understanding, has been proven
yeah.
that there is this entanglement across distances that would also explain the telepathy phenomenon that we've observed in all different cultures. So I think it's fine to explore these things, look at them, and see what theories best explain the phenomenon that we're seeing.
Yeah, I think it's an interesting theory, and it at first makes some sense, but then when you think further about it, and I did a little research on it because I had, like I said, I thought I'd heard this theory before, and I forgot why it got why it was disregarded by Catholicism.
By the scientific community.
Right. So St. Thomas Aquinas teaches, that the human person is a unity of body and soul.
Correct.
The soul is not just consciousness, but the animating principle of the body.
Mm-hmm.
That the human soul is immortal and does not dissolve when the body does.
That's correct.
So this temporary wave view suggests that an individual's consciousness dissipates back into some universal field upon death.
Mm-hmm.
So Aquinas had actually rejected this as a very old heresy. He rejected this, what's known as panpsychism, which the electromagnetic theory would, I think, fall under. So Aquinas' view was only humans possess rational, immortal souls capable of intellect and free will. Plants and animals have non-spiritual souls that perish with their body. So one of the main problems he saw with panpsychism is that if all things have some degree of consciousness, then the fundamental distinction between humans and other living things is blurred. So there's another theory that I've read recently about that's related to this, about thinking of energy as God himself. And so the idea would be that the fundamental stuff of existence is God was the Big Bang dispersed, right? That God himself was dispersed in the Big Bang, and that he himself is energy. And so there's a problem with this, because it's like a mysticism.
Right? Yeah, there's a problem, but there's also kernels of truth in it too, because we have to avoid heresies of pantheism of saying God is in everything.
Well, right,
but God is omnipresent.
But
as
we have to talk why, right? Because mm-hmm. God is different from his universe. God exists outside of his universe that he created. God is not the universe. He exists outside of the universe he created.
Of course, there's a distinction between God and his creation.
Right.
But God also permeates and sustains his creation.
Right. Right. But God's essence is not creation itself. His essence is outside.
No, his essence is creator.
Right.
So he is the creator and he is distinct from his creation. So there is a real distinction between creator and creation. And when you start to blur that line, that's when you get into heresies and when you get into the theories, which are just are not consonant with the reality that we observe.
When I think these theories that they're talking about, that they're saying is new but really isn't,
mm-hmm.
is a
it's
form.
It's a repackaged form.
It's a repackaged of the heresy of thinking that God's not separate from his creation.
Correct. Yes. Yeah, but at the same time, I mean, the Aristotelian thought that permeates St. Thomas Aquinas and much of the Catholic Church's teaching is also balanced out in some ways by Platonic thinking, which we find in many other fathers of the Church, Augustine, for example, where they're looking more at that God is coming and he's present in the forms. So it's really interesting to see all throughout the history of the Church the kind of this weaving back and forth of ancient ideas from the ancient philosophers of Socratic and Platonic thought, and then Aristotelian, which are not necessarily in contradiction, but they bring out slightly different vantage points for looking at reality.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's the same thing. There's nothing new under the sun. This quote, new theory, you're saying was talked about by Plato.
Well, you know, why do we read anything that comes out? Because it's it gets marketed as something new and fresh. Right. But a lot of times they are ideas that are repackaged from the past.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
A man who transitioned to female secretly recorded surgeons performing tumor removal surgery. In the operation, this person was recording them by putting their phone in their purse, which somehow was in the operating room.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, they're now suing the hospital. Under New York City's LGBTQ+ health care bill of rights, transgender patients are guaranteed the right to have their identity, their gender identity, recognized, affirmed, and documented. During surgery, the patient later finds out that the doctors were mocking him/her and commenting that he/she had man parts. So the lawsuit further claims that an operating room nurse had a hospital administrator change his/her sex designation in the patient records from female to male. This is almost too stupid to comment on, but what are your thoughts?
And I don't even know what you want me to comment on. I mean, it's just so ridiculous. So I think the whole transgender argument is silly because we're just not looking at the facts. I mean, look at the chromosomic reality that underlies all of these discussions. You're either XX or XY, even if there's genetic confusion or intersex, which is highly rare, form of where someone has both female and male body parts. Let's just look at the basics facts here. I mean, all this ideology, which is confusing people, is really silly in my mind.
Well, one thing that came to mind here for me is that the hospital was ultimately looking out for the patient's best interest. So studies on drug studies are almost not universally, but they're overwhelmingly. They have found that women are often regularly over-medicated because so many drug dosage trials are done on men.
Right.
So most cell lines used in early tests are male, and the drugs are typically tested on male lab animals.
Mm, interesting.
So the drugs are then optimized from the beginning to work on male bodies, and the male body and the human the female bodies are
they're more sensitive, or they don't require as high a dosage.
Yeah, they metabolize things differently. So right. It's known that in women, drugs tend to linger longer in blood and tissues. For example, the liver and kidneys process at different rates for men and women. That's why, they process alcohol differently.
Right?
So this hospital in reality was looking out for this patient's best interest, but now they're being sued and maybe this hospital is going to be sued and maybe successfully because of this standard in New York that you have to affirm their gender. And, you know, you, the hospital, I guess, legally was supposed to treat this person like a female, even though they were a male.
And it, and that may have killed him. It just flies in the face of common sense.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. A campus newspaper at Notre Dame has found that a professor secretly books rooms under a nondescript club name to distribute condoms and Plan B pills to students.
Whoa, seriously?
Seriously.
A professor?
Professor.
Is booking rooms and handing out condoms.
And Plan B pills.
Wow. Okay.
So the professor is a gender studies professor named Pam Butler, whose teaching subjects include, quote, U.S. histories of gender, sexuality, and empire, and, quote, female or feminist, queer, and trans theories of race and racialization, unquote, and, quote, reproductive politics, unquote. So
these are courses at Notre Dame?
I know. This is what I want to ask you about.
Wow. Okay.
So a Catholic university like Notre Dame claims to uphold the church's teaching on reproduction. So after the university was apprised of this secret contra-Catholic teaching club, the university, instead of taking action, did the opposite. So they have a they have all of their staff members are supposed to adopt this value statement of, quote, leadership and mission that, among other things, accepts and supports the Catholic mission of the university and fosters values consistent with that mission, unquote. Mm-hmm. So after this incident, they, instead of removing the professor, they changed the staff values.
What?
So
what did they change it to?
Well, they just removed the reference to the school's Catholic identity.
Okay.
All right. So my question to you, this is not new. Do you remember when Obama spoke at Georgetown and
yes.
at Notre Dame, and they made him cover up the IHS, the Greek name of
yeah.
Jesus, right? They made him cover it up. Right. Mm-hmm. In order for him to come speak there, and the schools right. acquiesced.
And they hide their own identity.
So why can't a single Catholic, like national Catholic university, have the backbone to stand up to these left-wing progressive views? There are regional Catholic universities, and I wonder if this is what makes them regional. Mm-hmm. You know, like a Franciscan in Steubenville. They would never.
No, clearly not. Or Benedictine or Ave Maria. There are some great Catholic schools out there with a clear identity, but it comes from leadership at the top. So if you don't have the leadership in the school that has the backbone to stand up against the nonsense going on in culture.
But why do none of them, Boston College, I could see doing the exact same thing as what Notre Dame did.
Yeah, unfortunately.
Definitely Georgetown.
But it comes from the leadership. I can tell you, I mean, we had just recently, it came here to Atlanta, Peter Kilpatrick, who's the head of Catholic University of America. He's a good friend of mine, and I've known him actually since he was the head of the engineering department at Notre Dame. And when he went there, he was working actually to improve the Catholic identity of the school. He was working with some of the other leadership within the college. And it was a struggle because there were some people who didn't have a strong Catholic identity.
So what would happen at Catholic University?
He's not there anymore.
What would happen there in D.C.?
Catholic University of America, they had an issue. They had a psychology professor who was, I don't remember all the particulars, but there was something going on with a lack of Catholic identity, and they fired the person.
Okay.
They got rid of him. Clear Catholic identity, but it stems from good leadership at the top. And so I think when you've got something like this going on at Notre Dame, you got a question. Like, who are the people who are in charge? Who are the people making the decisions?
Why are they even teaching these subjects?
Clearly, those are subject matters which are not in line with church teaching and the church's vision for the human person. They don't lead to the flourishing of the human person.
Well, the secret club was really just it was obvious that something like that was going to happen when you're teaching these subjects.
Yeah.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
The National Education Association is the largest labor union in the U.S. with more than 3 million members.
Wow.
It has direct influence.
It's kind of funny. I was driving down the street the other day and I saw some people on strike. They were the baristas. They were talking about, and they had signs like pro-union. And it was an interesting sight.
I wonder what union they're members of.
They were the baristas. They were outside of Starbucks.
They created their own.
I guess they did, yeah.
I bet they joined an existing union.
It's entirely possible.
Service workers or something like that.
But not as big as the NEA.
Right. Yeah. So they obviously have direct influence over the NEA does, not the baristas, over children, teachers, and education policy. It was this the charter was a, there was a federal charter granted in 1906 by Congress. They've got a unique stat or position in that they've got a federal charter.
Interesting,
right? So, and the charter had the simple purpose of, quote, elevate the teaching profession and promote education, unquote.
Okay.
So they're currently, right now, holding a training session that will include materials on, quote, advancing LGBTQ plus justice, unquote.
Hmm.
So one of the participant handouts is entitled, quote, messaging guide / transgender youth and the freedom to be ourselves / building our choir with a race, class, gender narrative, unquote. Among the bullet points in the memo are number one. This is not in the order that they're in the memo, but I'm pointing them out in this order. The handout specifically calls out, quote, Republicans and their arsenal of racist dog whistles, forgetting that their salaries are paid by American taxpayers, half of whom are Republican.
Right.
They specifically label any opposer to their view as a villain.
Hmm.
Not somebody to engage to talk about, but a villain.
An evil person. Mm-hmm.
It instructs educators to include pronouns everywhere, email signatures, badges. If your ID badge can't be changed, buy pronoun pins and wear them at all times because, quote, offering your pronouns is the simplest way to put things into practice, unquote.
Hmm.
They instruct teachers to pluralize all references to gender. The training document includes a sample email that would be used for employees, for like teachers, to announce their transition from male to female or female to male. So, I could go on, but you get the point.
Oh, yeah.
Let's go back to that initial mission statement of elevate the teaching profession and promote education. Where are you doing that in any way?
It's the opposite. It is turning the teaching profession into an indoctrination association.
And a political entity.
Clearly. It has become a political arm. And you see this particularly when you get teachers who are public school teachers who are taking kids out to protest something or other, which always happen to be liberal causes, and teaching children how to become activists. I think there's a real problem when we have turned the education into indoctrination. And there is a subtle difference. I mean, we always know that education is always, a society educates people because they want to bring them out of ignorance and bring them into a cultural understanding. But when they're trying to bring people into a culture which is not the broader culture, and they're not examining the underpinnings of what they're putting forward, they're just putting forward as a cause, completely detached from the truth, it's very problematic. It's clearly indoctrination. And it goes back to what Marx and Lenin said, that if you control education, you control the future of a country.
Yeah, and look at the expense of what? So I don't know if you saw that the University of California, San Diego, which is a very tough school to get into, any of the UC schools, they came out and said it publicly that they've got a problem. I forget what the percentage was. The number of incoming students that can't do fourth grade math.
Fourth grade math.
Everybody gets an A in high school in California, like everywhere else.
Right.
It's the easy A's. And so, instead of worrying about putting pins on, teachers to, announce your pronouns, maybe go teach math.
Yeah, that's an interesting idea. Maybe that's why, Chris, there's been such a growth in alternative types of schooling.
By the way, you know why that the in California, and I'm not sure if it's a California-centric problem, why these folks are having fourth grade math level education? Because many schools or administrations have declared math to be racist.
Oh, is it now? Gosh, I didn't realize it was racist. How is it racist?
I didn't know a language. Math is a language. That's all it is. It's a language.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know a language.
But it's also a reflection of reality.
Yeah.
And I think this is part of the underlying issue, because when you're starting to deny reality in so many different vantage points, math has a way of like being really black and white. And these people are looking for creating an alternative reality. And math just doesn't match with that.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
We're going to talk next about my favorite whipping boy, which is ADHD meds. So in an expose by the Wall Street Journal, they chronicle among others, a 7-year-old girl in an upscale private school in Philadelphia where she gets flagged for problems with her academic performance. Described as a creative kid, her parents are told she's easily distracted and her schoolwork was sloppy. This is a 7-year-old, mind you. The school tells the mother to see a psychiatrist who, of course, diagnoses her with ADHD and prescribes a stimulant. The pills make the girl agitated and angry, so a different doc puts her on Prozac. This is a 7-year-old girl.
Gosh.
More pills follow. Over the years, the girl is on 2 and sometimes 3 or more drugs at one time. By her late 20s, she's taken 14 different psychiatric pills. At age 29, she's now where she is now. She's struggling to wean herself off of some of these, noting that she didn't have the, you know, this is just so correct. She didn't have the words or authority to challenge what she was being told as a youngster.
Right.
So for one in five kids, ADHD drugs are just the beginning. The journal analysis of Medicaid data from 2019 to 2023 compared 166,000 3 to 14-year-olds. Yes, that's right. They're medicating 3-year-olds.
3-year-olds?
3-year-olds with speed who started ADHD meds in 2019. They compared those 166,000. They cut them into kids that were on ADHD meds and ones that weren't. So the medicated group was more than 5 times as likely to be on additional psychiatric meds 4 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Alexandra Perez is a clinical child psychologist at Emory, and she says she has seen children as young as 4 on multiple psychiatric medicines.
That is crazy.
The journal article goes on to chronicle a 3-year-old Tennessee boy who's flagged by his daycare provider as someone who's unable to sit still. Imagine that, a 3-year-old boy who can't sit still.
Isn't the definition of a 3-year-old boy?
I've never heard of a 3-year-old that can't sit still. I don't know where they're getting this.
Oh, my gosh.
His caregiver aunt takes the boy to a nonprofit healthcare organization in Tennessee that accepts his Medicaid insurance. A physician assistant diagnoses him with ADHD and what's called oppositional defiant disorder. By the way, that's a new one on me, and don't tell my wife that exists because I might get medicated. Oppositional
Isn't
defiant
that like
disorder.
The same as what we used to call kids with temper tantrums?
Yeah.
Okay.
So they put him, of course, on ADHD meds to keep him calm enough to stay in daycare.
Mm-hmm.
The aunt who later adopts the boy says on meds, he's like
a
zombie.
Wait. The aunt adopted the boy?
The aunt is the caregiver. I don't know where the parents are.
So maybe there was a problem with the parents before?
Well, who knows? Maybe they're deceased. They didn't say in the article.
No, I'm being facetious here.
Yeah, right.
Most of the time when I've worked with kids, 20 years of youth ministry, and most of the times when I see a problem in a kid, it's because of the parents.
Sure.
There's an issue with the parents. There's an issue in their relationship. There's an issue in the way that they're parenting. There's a lack of discipline. There's a lack of attention in the home. There's all and it's not, these are not psychiatric problems. These are discipline and family of origin problems.
Yeah. And I mean, in this case, right, you've got the aunt who's probably trying to do the right thing by adopting the boy,
sure,
and taking, you know, stepping
yeah,
in.
But it's generous,
yeah, there's this broader problem of offloading childcare. Like New Mexico has just introduced child preschool, not preschool, but child, I forget what the terminology was, but it's child care for all,
mm-hmm,
for free.
Right, for everyone.
So, you know, it just is going to incentivize parents to
absentee
let somebody
parents,
else
right,
yeah, take care of their kids, and, you know, probably because they want to be a dual income family,
mm-hmm,
right? So back to our Tennessee boy. She, you know, of course, observes that on meds, he's like a zombie. Each time she raises concerns, the docs just up his dosages. So later he gets put on an antipsychotic and a rotation of other drugs. She's frustrated with him now as a 6-year-old, and she, you know, decides to take him off his meds, and he seems like he's a normal boy who likes to just, you know, run and play outside. But his outlook has darkened, and he even threatens to stab another child at a camp. And who knows whether this is related to drugs he's previously taken or
sure,
something else. But so, of course, doctors put him back on antipsychotics, and he's 6-year-old. Okay.
Mm.
Once kindergarten starts, she's getting calls that he won't stay seated. So back on stimulants again, he goes, and the cycle continues.
Stimulants.
Yeah.
They for not
speed
being seated.
For ADHD meds. That's what they are. Stimulants.
Mm.
Okay. So they chronicle other stories, which I won't get into, but they go back to the girl who we started with from Philly, who quit taking ADHD meds in high school, but remains on antidepressants. So she's tried multiple times to get off, but the painful withdrawals have led to more medications, including antipsychotics, which lead to other symptoms like shaking and emotional numbness. She's had to go to the emergency room a couple times because of shaking episodes.
Hmm.
What are we poisoning our kids with?
I mean, Chris,
and we just do
I
it
think
like
the facts
as though it's science.
Right, it's ridiculous, and we're trying to deal with symptoms of issues that are actually much more related to relationship and to love. I think we went back to the basics of Catholic teaching, which is parents, love your children, be with them, parent them. There's the noble vocation of being a mother. I mean, for so many generations, we've had mothers who made sacrifices for their children or with them. And I think the modern values of, you know, working outside the home or two parent income, it's not helping our children. And the trying to deal with the symptoms with throwing drugs at it, as the facts are showing, it is only creating further problems.
Well, it's not only not helping your children, it's destroying them.
Yeah, it really is. So I think this, once again, we find so much evidence that points back to the ordered way of living that our Catholic faith proposes to the world. I think that's why so many young people are turning to Catholicism, saying, you know, in the craziness of this world, what's the institution that is making some sense and has some stability? It's the Catholic Church.
Crossed Wires. If there's an aspect of this topic that wasn't addressed or you'd like further clarification, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
There's an unfortunate and common credibility problem with these large language models such as ChatGPT that create fake citations or what's been called hallucinations.
Run into it all the time.
Yeah, so I thought it was worth talking about as this is increasingly adopted in our daily life. So do you know why these language models might hallucinate?
I think it's because they want to please you. They're set up in such a way that they flatter you, make you, you know, say, oh, that's a great question. So I think that that's why.
Well, in a way, that's yeah. So they're not actually fact-checking machines. They are next word prediction machines.
Mm.
Okay, so ChatGPT is designed to predict text patterns, not access real databases. So it's like having a conversation with someone who's read everything about something, but like the character in the movie Good Will Hunting has actually not experienced it.
Mm.
So they can sound incredibly knowledgeable, but have no context. You know, they can get specific facts wrong and not have any context, right?
Right.
So when you ask for sources from a, you know, ChatGPT search, it doesn't search a database for like a real paper. It simply generates a sequence of tokens that look like a legitimate citation.
Mm-hmm.
So imagine a multiple choice test. If a language model doesn't know the answer, saying I don't know guarantees 0 points. Taking a confident guess might get you right 1% of the time. And over time, that model guesses look more accurate on the leaderboard than the one that admits uncertainty.
Hmm. Interesting.
If there's a topic you'd like Father Daniel to address, send it to crossedwires@thequestatlanta.com.
Crosswires. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back again next week with a different take on the news.
This has been Crossed Wires, navigating news with faith, with Father Daniel Brandenburg, LC, and Chris McDonald. Today's secular news stories viewed through a Catholic lens on AM 1160, The Quest.